How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling, and we are going to be giving you one of our spotlight series, which we have not done in quite a while. We really only do these when somebody interesting pops up that we feel hasn't been covered a lot. As Leonard and I discovered in our research, this person has been covered a lot on YouTube anyway. Still, that is not stopping us from discussing him.
And a lot of it was the outside stuff going on with the gentleman, you know.
Right.
I think that's why, because he had a very short run in World Wrestling Entertainment, what was then the World Wrestling Federation, but so much outside of that.
That's right. So let's get started. We are going to be talking about a person who was an author, musician, an actor, a boxer, a mixed martial artist, a politician, and yes, a wrestler. That would be Tony Halame. And I had to really pay attention every time somebody said his name, so I said it correctly. AKA Ludwig Borga, to WWE fans, he was born January 6th, 1963, in Helsinki, Finland. Let's talk about his early years. We'll save some of the more controversial stuff for the end. And I will give a shout out to some of the other videos that you'll see on YouTube, because they are thorough and very quick in terms of covering all the points of his career. We're going to try to, you know, give special attention to some of his matches, which is what we do here. But in any event, he spent his childhood in Lauttasaari, Helsinki. His father left the family when he was about 6 months old. His older brother was pretty much his best friend, 5 years older than him, and he assumed the role of the father figure. They'd only ever heard from their father a couple times during their life. Their mother, unfortunately, was an alcoholic with several male partners, so we've been told, and so it's been written. Halame would go to study engineering, and he dropped out of that. But he was a heck of an athlete, participating in handball, ice hockey, and football, not to mention weightlifting. At 17, he won a silver medal at the Finnish Bodybuilding Championship. He later enlisted in the Finnish Army and continued his training with the Finnish military sports team. He would leave the Army, becoming involved in boxing and working as a bouncer. And as I'm sure Leonard saw, this guy had just about every job under the sun.
Varied life. He, as we'll get to, he died relatively young, but he packed so much into the years that he did have.
Once he saw the movie Taxi Driver, Martin Scorsese's classic, he moved to LA and stayed for 15 years, taking up steroids in his spare time.
I think it says a lot that he saw Taxi Driver and went, yes, I want to move to America. I want to have the Taxi Driver.
A psychology podcast could do a whole episode on that fact alone. He would work as a bodyguard for Cheap Trick and Gene Simmons, which I found fascinating. Mm-hmm. This led him to the world of professional wrestling. And if you've ever seen one of Borga's matches, you might think, who in the hell trained this guy? How about Vern Gagne, Masa Saito, and Brad Rangins? How he didn't soak up more knowledge from these guys,
right?
It's one of the great mysteries of wrestling.
Three great trainers, all three of them, and all different, kind of different styles a little bit, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So the fact that he went through all three, yeah, and came out where he did, kind of surprising.
Yeah, and he would start in the UWF under Herb Abrams, go watch that Dark Side of the Ring. And as he would be the Viking there, then he moved to New Japan and was given a really big monster push, because I guess every promotion was desperate for talent in these days. He defeated
Especially in Japan, a lot of these guys, if you go back and you look at the period, that early 90s, I mean, who was over from America? You had Scott Norton and Hercules and the Jurassic Powers that we've talked about before. And the Road Warriors were working over there. So I think, and again, he was an American, but he was coming from America. He was Finnish. He was Caucasian. And just a big power brawler dude. You know, that seemed that type of geijin, if I'm saying the word correctly, was what was over in Japan at the time.
Yeah, geijin, I guess.
Geijin.
Yeah, and we'll get into more about what everybody saw in this guy here when we go over his matches. But yeah, he would defeat the likes of Scott Norton, Vader, Shinya Hashimoto, is a notable one for Japanese fans. He would take part in several boxer versus wrestler matches, one of which I watched, and I'll talk about that later. He tried the tag team thing in Japan, even winning the IWGP tag straps with Scott Norton, but eventually left the promotion after he had issues with Norton and Road Warrior Hawk, even sucker punching Norton, apparently. And so they didn't know what to do with the guys, so they just had Ludwig Borga, Halame, they just had him lose repeatedly. So then he left. So, Leonard, any other thoughts on his early days?
Well, we're going to get into his WWE portion here next. I would like to say that the reason we're talking about Borga today is that we recently did our SummerSlam rebook for 1993 SummerSlam rebook, which he was on. And I remember making some comments about him, and that's how we got to this point. As far as his early days goes, again, he packed in so much in a little amount of time where the UWF seemed to be a blip. Japan was much more prominent for him. And again, working with all those guys in Japan and not getting better, kind of what we talked about with who trained him. But it's going to show kind of what his trouble was throughout. You know, Scott Norton and Hawk are both, you know, big, tough dudes, and they do what they want to do.
Right.
So when Borga, you know, butts heads with these guys, he's going to have, you know, trouble with them. Because he's not going to tell Scott Norton what to do, and Scott Norton's going to do it. So I think that was, as we'll see, some problems with him. But I think I definitely, if I was, you know, WWE, we're going to sign this guy, and I looked at what he was doing in New Japan, I might go, maybe we don't want him in the locker room.
Right, and I don't think due diligence was done in hiring him, and that's something Jim Ross has said in retrospect as well. So he would debut as Ludwig Borga for the WWF, the evil foreign heel who had the Finnish flag on his gear and entered to the Finnish national anthem because, you know, got to be consistent, right?
Yeah, big foreign heel guy. You know, he came in 93. If he had come in a couple years earlier, or if Hogan had stayed after King of the Ring, he would have been put into a program with Hogan, definitely. But he wound up being put in a program with Lex Luger, who was the next Hulk Hogan. So that tells you Vince, even at this time, Vince McMahon, was still in that foreign heel mode. Like, that's all he knew how to do with a guy like Borga.
Yeah, absolutely. He was given a push here as well. He would end Tatanka's undefeated streak and enter the program with, as you said, Lex Luger. And so let's get on to his matches. And, you know, we'll just mention it here because it's quite a prominent part of his story. He had a SS Schutzstaffel tattoo on his calf. For anybody who, you know, is familiar with Nazi Germany and all that history, and he would have to cover it up. But like the fact that he was still allowed to do that even then, like, is just kind of mind blowing to me. Kevin Nash, I watched a clip of his podcast talking about Borga, and his words were, you know, he was a different cat, and Kevin Nash is trying to be nice because I guess he stayed with him at one point, but he wore this tattoo prominently in Tel Aviv, which is like, if that doesn't tell you all you need to know about this person, then stay tuned because we'll get more into it. But so his matches, I gotta be honest, like, I've gone back and, like, this era of wrestling, I wasn't really watching a lot, and I've talked about that in other shows. But, you know, I would go back and watch the WrestleManias from this era, maybe some of the more prominent pay-per-views. I did not. I knew his name. I knew his name for sure. I remember that he was a blip on the radar of WWF. I did not remember what this guy looked like in any way. And so when I saw him, I was like, okay, like, you know, he's mean looking. I mean, he's a big dude. He's certainly not chiseled out of stone. You know, I mean, he like has a solid physique, certainly. But, you know, this guy's matches to me were like the dregs. I mean, like all of his matches were the same. Most of them, the ones that were under 5 minutes, like the squash matches, were just so bad. And like his moveset was so limited. So, you know, Leonard, you nicely sent me most of the matches that I watched. I went a little bit beyond in terms of his Japan stuff, which, by the way, since that was an early one, I'll just comment on that.
Yeah, I watched,
like, he did a lot of boxer versus wrestler things over there. And he would be in one match, which was versus the Soul Taker, which is Charles Wright.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
that was the gimmick in Memphis before it became Papa Shango.
Right. And it was what it was. It literally was like a boxing match kind of, or like almost like a kickboxing match. I guess if you think that the mixture of mixed martial arts and, you know, work style professional wrestling can be successful, then you might enjoy some of that stuff. You know, to me, it was what it was. It just kind of, to me, highlighted the fact that he can't actually put on a very good match. But Leonard, why don't you talk about some of the matches you sent me, and I'll chime in.
Sure. You know, I think I was a little more impressed with him than you were. I also sent you a video from a YouTube series called Ring of the Hawk.
Yeah.
Where he watches a relatively short run of someone in a company and then analyzes the matches, grades them, ranks them.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, this guy is better than he would have guessed. I think the problem is, and you hit kind of the nail on the head, if you watch one of his squashes, then you might go, oh, hey, he's okay. When you watch 10 in a row, then that's when the repetitiveness really sits in.
Yeah, you know, you said that the guy clearly liked this, you know, Borga's matches more than I did. And like, he would comment on some of the moves that were cool and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, the throwing the person up and giving them an uppercut. Yeah, that's cool. This era is like, to me, of WWF exemplifies like how like just behind the times they were. The matches are so slow and prodding, and Vince is still trying to hold on to that 80s style.
Yeah. And
look at a match like that, and then now look at, forget what company, look at either WWE or AEW now, and just the pacing is just like, we've come so far in terms of like, let's get a little bit faster of pacing. Like, yeah, the slow psychology style matches can really still be good if it's from people that were good at it, but this is not one of them, in my opinion. And, you know, he had some moves that were okay, but like some of those, like, you know, there's the headlock that was overused, and like he clotheslined a ton, and it's just like, you know, and the Luger match, which I'm assuming was on one of the random Coliseum video.
Yeah, because there's no commentary on that, but you see the Coliseum video on the video screen as they're walking out. So
that was god awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, of some of the matches that I sent you that we watched, went over a series of jobbers, Gary Jackson, JS Storm, Phil Apollo, Greg Hatfield, Rich Myers, I believe was the other one. And yeah, you're right. All of these are about the same. He jumps the guy at the bell. He beats him with punches. He does a choke lift into a drop or a slam. He does that where he throws a guy up in the air and punches him in the gut. He does what's called a cab driver slam, side slam, usually finishes with the torture rack. All these are under 5 minutes. And again, I think if you watch one of them, you can be impressed with his power. It's when you watch a bunch of them in a row that you kind of you know, get tired of it. And I will say that I think he had a lot more energy and drive in the squashes than, say, the more competitive matches or the matches where he was going to lose.
Yeah, and when you took him beyond that, like, 5-minute mark, he gassed.
Yeah.
He gassed immediately. And so when you put him in there with somebody like, and this to me was probably his best match, Scott Steiner.
Yeah.
Like, his lack of cardio shows immediately, because Scott Steiner is, like, you know, pun intended, genetic freak. And, you know, so, like, that match was entertaining to me because it was more back and forth.
Yeah.
But let's talk about his finisher, because thankfully that one video you sent me where the guy goes over all of his squash matches details what his finisher was initially.
Like, yeah.
Big clothesline or whatever, because I don't know, you might think totally different about this, Leonard, but like the whole torture rack thing, just because he's entering a program with Luger, I got to use Luger's old finisher, wink, wink, nudge, to me is weak. That's weak sauce.
Yeah. I liked, as the Ring of the Hot guy said, the original finisher was much better than when he started to use the torture rack all the time. And that was definitely just a dig at Luger. And I don't remember if it was in that video or another video that I was watching that said something about, oh, you know, when Luger went into the WWE, they didn't want him to use the torture rack.
Right.
And now they've given that to this guy who's going to enter into a program with him. So.
Right. So yeah, let's see if there's any other matches that we,
yeah, well, so there's, so the three matches I think that we watched that were against name opponents, there was the Scott Steiner one, which you mentioned, which I think was again really, really good because of the back and forth and a lot because what Scott could do at that time. There was a Luger match, which was, I think it picks up but as it goes, but it's very plotting. And one thing in the Luger match, I think that was the match where, yeah, there was a fan in the crowd that takes off his shirt and flexes, and that gets a pop.
Yeah.
And then later on, Borga says, like, points at the guy and says, "For you," before he punches Luger in the gut.
Yeah, he wouldn't leave him alone. And
yeah.
The guy wouldn't leave him alone, but that's what fans do.
Like, yeah. But one thing I did notice is Borga did draw heat. You know, sometimes he would just stand there and just glower at the crowd and get heat. So I did think he was good in that regard. I think the crowd was reacting to him.
Yeah. So, like, one of the things, this kind of segues into one of the clips I looked up from Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. And sure. Pritchard said that he...
Before you get to that, just real quick, the other match we watched was the Tatanka match where he ended
Tatanka. Yeah.
A win streak, which was, of course, a huge feather in his cap, and there was a lot of chicanery going on. Mr. Fuji came out because Borga was going to be on Yokozuna's Survivor Series team and all this, and then they were going to get to that rematch that never happened between the two of them. But again, that was a match too that seemed plotting, even though I really liked the chair shot that Borga delivers in that one. I thought he gave a really good chair shot. So sorry to interrupt, but the Bruce Pritchard clip.
Yeah, he basically, he was saying that they thought that he could be their Ivan Drago and, you know, the ultimate foreign heel, that people were afraid of him in real life, you know, but in real life, he was also a prick and an a-hole, as Bruce Pritchard said. But then the bell rang, as the phrasing goes on that podcast. So I think that, yes, he could draw heel heat. I think... Though making your foreign heel a guy from Finland is like, just like, we have nothing else. Is there really no other ideas in the so-called box of gimmicks that we can give this guy? We have to make him an evil Finnish person. Like, that doesn't even make sense in any way. Like, you know, I mean, do anything to make him a villain. Put him in a mask, maybe not a mask. Like, give him a generic gimmick that would just showcase how he looks like a douche.
So you would not have played up the foreign aspect of him? I mean, because he really was Finnish.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. It wasn't like Yokozuna, who was, you know, Samoan. They were pretending he was Japanese at the same time.
I think that the evil foreigner thing had played itself out. You know, Yokozuna is a bit of an anomaly because, yes, he was around during this era and he was WWF champion and all that. But Yokozuna was huge and, you know, intimidating and all that. I just think that they were clinging, Vince specifically, was clinging to the evil foreign heel gimmick too often and too late in some of these runs. Like, and I'm not saying that it can't work ever, but like they used it, gosh, I mean, as recently as
Rusev.
Thank you. I was going to say Rusev Day, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think Rusev was the most recent one. And even that was, you know, I mean, he's a good talent. I like him, mm-hmm. but anyway. So yeah, the other clip I think I saw, like I already mentioned, Jim Ross said that, you know, this guy was uncomfortable in and out of the ring and that no tears were shed when he left. So that pretty much sums up it. You know, he had that match with Marty Jannetty.
Yeah, that was at SummerSlam 93.
Probably one of his better ones as well.
Yeah, and that was because of the way Marty could sell. And again, they were trying to get him over to position him, you know, to go after Luger. So the end, and I'm sure you have this here, the end of his run, he was supposed to have that rematch with Tatanka at Royal Rumble 94, I believe. And what was it? I'm sure you have that there. He had an injury. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, he broke his ankle.
I was going to say it was something with his foot.
In a match with Rick Steiner. And that clip is available online. You know, they're battling down the aisleway, and you can see where he injures it. Conrad with Bruce Pritchard basically gave all these different things, like, you know, was it the injury? Was it the fact that you just didn't have anything else for him? Was it not a right fit that made him leave? And it was like all of the above was the answer. Like, this was just a way for them to make a clean break with this guy. And apparently he did try to return in 1997, which I did not realize. But
no, I saw that one of the things that we were watching, and I think it was maybe he put some feelers out. I don't think it was a serious look. I don't think he came in for anything.
Yeah. So let's get into some of his post WWE years. After he left there, he would wrestle in the Catch Wrestling Association for a couple years, winning their heavyweight title from Rambo. Yes, Sylvester Stallone himself. No, not actually Stallone. Rambo was the guy who was sniper in the WWF.
Oh, okay. I did not see. I saw that he wrestled for Catch Wrestling. I did not see that he had their title. But yes, sniper from the Truth Commission, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He would then move on to MMA fighting. And see, I said move on to MMA fighting in the Rings organization. And apparently, because that record is on Wikipedia, but apparently the Rings organization was a work shoot organization. And I couldn't really find anything other than that, but I found that fascinating. But he would have a fight in the UFC, and I did watch this, and my goodness, like, he fought at UFC 13 against the debut of Randy Couture. If there's any bad draw, you would a young, hungry Randy Couture, a guy who eventually would go on not just to be a UFC legend, but I feel like he was given, like, anybody that watches UFC a lot or knows the history, like, he was given some of these guys that either really put down MMA or were boxers who think they could do it with no trouble. Like, he would be given these guys all the time. And the reason he was given them is because Randy Couture was, like, not just a wrestler, but he was really proficient at what they call, ground and pound, dirty boxing, that type thing. So, like, he beats Tony Halima in 56 seconds. He pulls a double leg on him that is so quick and, you know, gets him down, moves around him like it's nothing, and puts him in a chokehold to end it. And it is just, it's fascinating to watch. Apparently, there's a clip of Couture talking about this match. I did not get a chance to watch that. I wish I had time, but yeah. So you can watch that if you care to. He would have a political career starting in 2003, where he entered, finished parliamentary elections, he was of the far right Finnish party, the True Finns, as they were called. But, you know, he immediately would get into trouble. He, after being elected, which apparently was a surprise of a lot of people, but he called the then Finnish president, Tarja Halonen, a lesbian, which got him into trouble. And like his response, I'm paraphrasing here, was interesting to me because he just literally thought she was a lesbian.
Yeah, I was like, I read that too. It was like, no, I wasn't saying that derogatory. I just thought she was.
Right. Even though she was married to a man who was also in politics. So he was also elected to the city council of Helsinki in 2004 municipal elections. His term would eventually end in 2008. You know, all during this time, though, he was having issues with the law. And yeah. Like I said, there's other videos. And I'm telling you right now, if this doesn't become a Dark Side of the Ring episode next season, I don't know what will. Because
considering this, everything that they've been through, that they haven't done Borga yet, is kind of surprising. Now, of course, he has passed, and I don't know. They may have a hard time finding people over in Finland to talk about him.
I was going to say, the only way that works is if they get his wife to do it. And, I mean, she shouldn't have a problem doing it, because once she divorced him, she wrote a tell-all book. So, like, you would think she'd be not
up to doing it. She has, because she has spoken about it in the past.
Yes. And they would have a lot of fights. And I guess during one of them, a handgun was fired from inside the apartment. And, you know, he was, you know, on a lot of drugs and was taken away in an ambulance and would be in a coma for a while. And, you know, the gun was unlicensed. The police would find steroids in his office, amphetamines in his blood. And like, he would have multiple issues with the law.
He got pulled over, I believe, several times for not just drunk driving, but drug induced, you know, impaired driving.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. And
about that coma too, people who knew him, he wasn't a great guy anyway, but when he came out of that, it seemed like he had a lot of mental issues, but became mentally challenged to a degree coming out of that coma.
Yes. And he would have to go to a mental hospital, apparently due to delirium from excessive alcohol abuse. He would develop cirrhosis of the liver and acute pancreatitis. And, you know, Leonard mentioned the short-term memory loss. He wrote several books, as I indicated earlier. He was an author, and I've not read any, but what I've heard is that he was not shy about the fact that he was homophobic and racist, and like any of his political views that were controversial, you could read about in these books. So
he is the most controversial spotlight we have done since Ranger Ross the Bank Robber.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, this guy like really did have like, and the thing is, you know, and we'll get to his legacy, but he obviously, you know, was not dumb in that he accomplished so much. I mean, he was on the Finnish version of American Gladiators. Well, it was obviously not American Gladiators.
Yes, Finnish Gladiators, but it originated in the U.S. So then, of course, they teleported that to transported that to other countries.
Right. So sadly, on January 8th, 2010, 2 days after his 47th birthday, Halame died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The gun was unlicensed. His body was found 2 days later. He was also an actor. Leonard, his acting peak was probably Die Hard with a Vengeance, right?
Yes, he was. I can't remember the name of the character, but he's the...
Roman.
Okay, because isn't he the one that takes the badge? And is where no, that's a different character. But he's in the elevator with John McClane, right?
That rings a bell. I believe one probably the least, but
yes, I believe he is one of the guys that was in the elevator with McClane that he winds up taking out. So
yeah, and apparently also, and like I read two disputing reports about this. Like, he was apparently also cast in Titanic. But what I read on Wikipedia was that he couldn't do it due to a scheduling conflict. And what one of the videos you sent me said was that he didn't do it because he thought it was a documentary, which I don't know. Either way, the fact that he was almost in Titanic is just insane to me.
Do we know what role it would have been?
I've been thinking about that a lot today. Probably, okay. Of course, given more thought to it than I should. The only thing I can think of is that he could have been like maybe a random, I don't want to say sailor, but a random member of the crew or of the Titanic, maybe somebody in the bowels of the ship, like one of those people that was shoveling the coal.
Next time I watch the movie, and it's one of my wife's favorite movies, is I will have to watch it with an eye as to who could have Ludwig Borga been.
Yeah, make that a great segue. Ludwig Borga could have played this. Let's go watch one of his matches so you know who he is.
Yeah, it's good. He could have been that guy.
Yeah. You know, his what are we left with? His legacy. This is a guy that accomplished a lot in his life. And
yeah. Even if you don't agree with his politics and his viewpoints, just what he was able to do in 47 years of life, considering last few years were, you know, fairly wasted, unfortunately.
He had an album that apparently one video found this cover, back cover, which I found hilarious, on the back, because of his views on homosexuals, it was a picture of his ass that said no exit, or what?
Exit only.
Exit only.
Yes. Exit would be the other way around.
He'd be on
exit only, which is apparently a real tattoo that he had. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, he accomplished a lot for somebody that only was a blip on the professional wrestling scene.
Yeah. Talking legacy, I think when people remember him, it is one of those, that era, you know, from like the new generation era, WWF was so down that when you talk about why it was down, why it was bad, you go, oh, well, Ludwig Borga was part of it. You know, that I think he's that, as far as wrestling goes, he's kind of a joke. He's kind of a punchline. He's a bad character, even though, like I said, I think he had more potential than I think you're giving him. But the idea is he never would have lived up to that potential because of his personality. And, you know, he seemed to have an unwillingness to really learn or to work with different people or to take one for the team, that type of thing. So
I imagine him thinking that he was probably the toughest guy in the room. And that just, when you enter a room like that, even in that era, you're not going to be the toughest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the promos they gave him, and, you know, for somebody whose language probably wasn't English his first language, like his promos could have been a lot worse, but they gave him nothing. Like, oh, the crumbling building, and this is what America, like, it's
just, it was just him walking around pointing at crumbling buildings.
It's just tired and old, and like, you know, I'll say, like, look at it, somebody like right now who's insults, you know, other countries and stuff, like MJF does it a lot right now. But like when he does it, like, you believe it, like, you know, you really think this guy hates everybody. Like when Borga was doing it, he was playing a role, and like it was just tired, and I think just recycled too much. But, you know, he certainly left an interesting mark, and I will be interested to see if the Dark Side of the Ring guys try to tackle his life, because as many videos as there are on YouTube, there's probably a lot of people out there that do not know about everything that he did.
Yeah. And that's one of those things, like, I had kind of an inkling of what he did, but after he left wrestling. But it wasn't until we did this and we started watching all these videos and reading up stuff that I went, oh, I did not know it was all that.
Yeah, it was. Am I getting this name right? Was Brockus around this era too?
Yeah, I would have to look, but that sounds correct.
That might be a future Spotlight series.
Sure.
If there even is anything to do it on. But anyway, So let us know what you thought of Ludwig Borga. If you have any memories of him at all, let us know. And if you've listened to any of his albums, please let me know how they sound. I don't know that they'd be on Spotify.
Probably not. I wonder, you know, is it it's Finnish folk? I mean, what is it? It's Finnish metal, death metal?
I have no idea what the genre is. I would imagine, I mean, God, I mean, if it's anything other than metal, somebody was not paying attention.
Yeah, Euro metal, yeah.
So, yes, let us know what you think of our episode here. And please comment however you see fit. Check out other videos, Segment Surgery, Stupid Questions, Random Match Reviews. We're also available wherever you listen to podcasts. For Leonard, my name is Chad, and we will see you next time.